Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
President Biden's botched withdrawal from Afghanistan. Last year, the Biden White House released a report and it blamed former President Trump for the chaotic withdrawal, if you can believe that one, claiming that Biden was severely constrained by Trump's decision. Now, Congressman, you have been talking a lot about this for a year and a half since it happened. Your reaction to the Biden White House actually claiming that it's Trump's fault for this botched withdrawal, and what are you expecting to hear today?
Well, importantly, Maria, we're going to have a number of the Gold Star families from Abbey Gate at this hearing. They deserve answers. The American people deserve answers. The veterans that have been so scarred by how this shameful withdrawal happened deserve answers. And what I want to know is these two four-star generals, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, the other McKenzie responsible for all Middle East operations, what did they advise into the president? And then what did he ignore in terms of those military advice? One of the things I expect to hear is that the State Department under Blinken waited way too long to order that withdrawal and to start getting American citizens, our allies, and the embassy personnel out. And
that is Representative Michael Waltz of Florida answering the question of Maria Bartiromo on Fox Business. Right now, the hearing has begun.
Ground across the country. Yet the Biden administration's failure to plan for their withdrawal threatened the safety and security of U.S. personnel in country. As a result, in July of 2021, 23 State Department employees in Kabul sent a dissent cable channel to Secretary Blinken warning of their grave concerns for Afghanistan's stability and for their own safety.
That's Representative McCall, Michael McCall of Texas. This is happening right now. The hearing just started. Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. The withdrawal from Afghanistan was a complete and total failure. You had 13 service members who were killed on the day of the withdrawal. You have the images of people running to try and get on to the wheels of the plane in order to get out. We left Americans to die at the hands of the Taliban. We left Afghans who worked with us to die at the hands of the Taliban. But let us, at the very least, take a step back to acknowledge something about our two decades in Afghanistan. Damn, did we screw that up. And you know as well as I do, I don't mean we as in you and me. You and me didn't do anything wrong. We trained Afghan forces to fight like American forces. For two decades, no one said, hey, this is a terrible idea. This is an absolutely terrible idea. Why in the world would we, the United States, train Afghan forces to think of a military operation in terms of air support? That's how we do it. That's how our military does it. We come in via the air and boom, boom, pow, ping. It's Joe Pesci. And then ground forces come in. Air superiority is how we do everything. Why would we think that the Afghan forces can do this? Because we do. They don't have the hardware. They would need to get it from us. Oh, something else you need in order to have air superiority. You need to be able to keep the lights on. Two decades in Afghanistan? You didn't notice that could be done? That couldn't be done? You didn't notice that that wasn't something they were capable of doing? Yes, the Afghans were able to fight back the Russians. The Russians gave up. Because that's what happens in Afghanistan. And you know how it happens? With guys on freaking horses. So why didn't we train the Afghan military as light infantry? Why didn't we train them in the way that they could be successful? 20 years and nothing to show for it. Well, that's not totally true. Some women and children lived without being raped. All right, look, I'll take my victories where I can. But you understand the problem in that conversation, right? The problem in that conversation is that we didn't recognize or weren't willing to recognize or did not admit that they are not us. And they cannot do what we do. They can do something different. They can do what they do. And for two decades plus, nobody was held to account. Nobody answered where the money was. Nobody got fired. When we talk about the botched withdrawal from Afghanistan, who got fired? What general got busted down to corporal and then was dishonorably discharged? None. Absolutely, positively, none. And that's obscene. You've got Michael McCall talking about the Gold Star families, the families of those who died.
Paul G. Hunter Lopez. Dagan Page. Humberto Sanchez. David Espinoza. Jared Schmitz. Riley McCollum. Dylan Marola.
He's naming those who were killed in that attack, that bombing that took place on the day of the withdrawal. The family members are there. They want answers to the question. What happened? Why was this so horrific? They are not wrong to want answers. They are not wrong to want their pound of flesh. I would say to them, without an ounce of hesitation. By the way, we should note that Code Pink is there, Medea Benjamin and her group of commies who are there to either disrupt the testimony. They're opposed to all everything. They're opposed to all war. What they're really opposed to is the existence of the United States. That's what they're opposed to. I saw them there and I figured I'd share it. I don't think these families are wrong for demanding answers. I don't hold an ounce of ill will against any of them. But why aren't we being given answers about how you buffoons in two political parties spent 20 years and trillions of dollars and got nothing? We left unceremoniously, and you fell in an hour. Now, as for the Biden administration blaming Trump, it is pathetic. Well, we were hamstrung. Well, he was making deals with the Taliban, this, that, and the other. You're the United States of America. Make a different deal. You're the president now. Make a different deal. And what does any of it have to do with protecting American citizens during a withdrawal? Let's discuss the idea that defense did not coordinate with state on how to get this done. Or you could argue state did not coordinate with defense. You didn't coordinate? You didn't talk? You didn't share? Why am I surprised? The people who were too incompetent to teach the Afghans how to fight properly based on their own methodologies were, of course, too stupid to actually talk to each other. And you say to me, Tony, why are you calling people stupid? Stupid ends conversation. You say it all the time. What else am I supposed to say? 20 years, trillions of dollars. I want to know how many people ended up with a Porsche collection. I want to know how many people within the industrial complex, the military industrial complex, or anyplace else got vacations. It's total failure. And people got financially rewarded. I want the money back. I want some generals getting busted and then dishonorably discharged. Couldn't we at least have somebody go to jail? For the love of all things good, decent, and holy. Good God. So this hearing is going to happen. I might check back into it. I don't mind these families getting answers and blame being delivered. But honestly, it's not enough. How did you fail after 20 years? How did you not fix it after 2 years? And who gets fired? And to quote Harvey Keitel, someone's got to go to jail. I'm Tony Katz. If you have a child in college or going to college, or if you know somebody who does, you have heard the term FAFSA. The FAFSA is a ridiculously invasive form, free application for federal student aid, that was created by the federal government as a way of knowing how many kids are going to school, how can we give them money, and most importantly, how can we get more information on their parents? Because none of it is about actually being helpful. This is about information. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. What's going on, everybody? 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. That's the number. That's how you get to be a part of the show. Feel free on X at Tony Katz. This form is brutal. And from what I hear from people who have dealt with this form in the past is that it was more brutal in years past. It was much tougher. But they decided they were going to make some changes to it. They were going to decide, I don't know. It's not that it was going to be less invasive. Oh, no. It was just going to be easier to fill out and equally as invasive. Well, they redesigned it. But of course, being the federal government, this is a recording. I've got other stories like this coming up. They can't design a form properly. And they couldn't design a form on time. But colleges are getting applied to. Kids are getting acceptance. And in order to figure out what kind of financial aid they can get, they need this form filled out. But the form isn't really working. So what's happening? Kids aren't able to get information from the school because the school's got to go about its normal system. It's got to get people approved. There are plenty of people who are going to be writing a check and paying full freight. So what's happening is kids are saying, you know what? I ain't going. Forget this. It's too difficult. It's too much of a problem. The Department of Education, as reported, on track to see 2.8 million fewer FAFSAs submitted this year. That is a 20% decline. They're not sure if they're going to get the money. They're not sure about the system. So they're saying, all right, I'm not going. Now, full disclosure. I filled out the FAFSA because my kid is going to school. We talked about it. We discussed it. It is a computer-related field. College makes sense. There are plenty of other options. Nope, this is where I'm going to go. This is what I'm going to do. Solid. You know that dad has been a little too successful in radio. And while it's not TV money, you know I'm not going to qualify, and you're not going to qualify for any financial aid. You better get some scholarships, kid. You better, every single weekend, all I want to hear from you is, applied for another 43 scholarships. I don't care if it's $200. You better be applying, and you better say thank you. Oh, it's been some great conversations over here. It's been lovely. Kid's fantastic. But filled it out. I will tell you that I don't know what it was like in the past. I will tell you that what was confusing was that, you know, we're the parents. All right, well, we'll fill this out. What we didn't know is that the kid had to fill it out too. And when you're filling out the FAFSA, you realize that they ask questions that, holy cow, hey, we probably think that you're a kid who doesn't talk to his mom. You don't know who your real dad is. This person won't provide you any information. This person won't help you. It's 27 different ways of asking, hey, how craptastic was your childhood? And for someone to respond, my childhood was totally craptastic. Good Lord. The FAFSA is so depressing. It's like listening to players from the Buffalo Bills talk about losing four Super Bowls in a row. It is just, it would be like listening to Jim Kelly say, oh, and then the third Super Bowl, oh, you don't even want to know. It's just a mess. But so we filled it out, and there's this moment where it says, okay, you put in your personal information, and we're going to go and we're going to grab your tax records. We're going to share it with everybody. You're like, oh, this is fantastic. Now, I want you to know, I fought the FAFSA for a while. There's no point. I'm not doing it. What we couldn't get a good read on, we couldn't get people to answer this question. I'm hoping to get the answers. So I said, all right, for my kid, I will do this nonsense. It's one thing that you're not going to get financial aid if you don't fill out the FAFSA. Right? You're not going to get it. Understood. My kid's not going to get it anyway. I probably make too much money, but fill it out. Why? Because it's possible without the FAFSA, you're not eligible for scholarships. Now, I don't know how the hell that works. Now, you could tell me that there are some financial needs scholarships, but there are also many other scholarships. By the way, if you know of any good scholarships, tony@tonykatz.com, please send them my way. Remember, it's radio money. I find that to be bothersome. But I was like, you know what? Let's figure it out. Let's give it a go. Maybe we'll only do it this one year, this one time, and we'll learn that this is a big hot mess, won't provide us any value, and we won't do it again. So we did it. But we didn't know that the kid has to fill out their own. Thought that was interesting. All right. So the kid fills out their own. The process was actually, in my view, extremely easy. Which makes me think I did it completely wrong. They're like, okay, you pick the school, you put it in, the kid's thing is done, your thing is done, we'll match things up, we'll send it to the boys in the lab, and the next thing you know, they'll come back with, all right, here's what's going on. I have no idea if I did it right. No clue. You know what I do know? That this is not the first dip in college education that we have seen or that we will see. This is the start of a trend. Start watching for this. So what is happening is that when you take a look at just straight demographics, whether it be COVID-related or just demographically related, less kids are going to college. Maybe they don't trust being around all those other students for their health. Maybe they're like, you know what? I've already been, you know, doing things from home. I don't need to pay for college. I could just do this online course. I could do this thing, that thing, the other thing. And less people are going, which is making college as much more competitive, which is the way we approached it. The way my oldest approached it was, okay, these are the schools that fit an idea of A, the kind of a person I am, B, the offerings that would, I think, help me with a future. Now let them compete and fight for me. What will they offer? What will they give? What is their cost? Because that's what this is all about. It's what are you going to do to get me? What is it that you really offer me? Not how I have to prove myself to you. I loved that approach. Well, that approach means the colleges have to be more competitive, which means you're going to start seeing a squeeze and a closing of the smaller schools. They will not be able to compete. They will not be able to keep up. It's going to start, whether that's any day now, colleges will start closing. They will start going under, or they'll be acquired by other schools. That's coming. Another 2.8 million fewer students. That's a lot of tenured teachers who who might have to figure out, well, maybe there's no career for me here. But I have tenure, so I'm safe. None of the students aren't there, Boo Bear. Keep an eye on the FAFSA. This is Tony Katz today. Now a Kansas City Chiefs fan. Congratulations. That's right. Two football references in one show. That's what we do. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. What are you doing? What do you know? What's happening? 833-GOT-TONY. 833-468-8669. That's the number. That's how you get to be a part of what we're doing. 833-GOT-TONY. This is Harrison Butker. B-U-T-K-E-R is his last name. Kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs. Three-time Super Bowl champion. Kansas City Chiefs. I know. It's not what I wanted. But hey, I'm not on the team. I don't own any part of it. My life wasn't changed by it. I'm moving on. He is getting interviewed because, as you know, when they won the Super Bowl and there was a big celebration, you know, they have the parade and everything else. There was a shooting. A woman died, radio host, part-time radio host, but radio host was killed. Mom. It's awful. Well, he's doing an interview, I think with a local group out there in Kansas City. And the interviewer is like, should we be discussing gun control and gun violence? And what are your thoughts? Well, Harrison Butker, it seems, has thoughts. And his thoughts are far from where this host thought things were going to go. Very, very far.
I do want to ask, there is a debate in this country over the best way to curb gun violence after being so close to it.
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
Yeah. I had to do a lot of thinking about what took place at the parade. I know gun violence was a big discussion, but at the end of the day, this is degenerate violence and it should not be occurring. I think we need strong fathers in the home. I think we need men that are leading, that are setting good examples, that are teaching the young men in our society that violence is not the way to handle our disputes. It's very unfortunate what happened. Unfortunately, many, many children were injured. A beautiful young lady was killed over someone getting offended and turning to violence to handle that dispute. It's so sad. I don't think guns are the issue. I think we need fathers in the home that are being great examples for our youth.
Well, that was clearly something that was unexpected.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Fathers in the homes. We have discussed this before. But it is a subject worth repeating. If you grow up with no father figure, how do boys know how to be men? And there's a real conversation that's being had. Oh, someone's going to call me racist for this. Watch how little I care. That if you're talking about, for example, black men or black children, raised predominantly by women, surrounded by women, they do not know how to be men because they have no male role models in their lives. I would argue that this is true of anyone, regardless of skin color. That if there are no men in your life, you do not know how to be a man. And when I say this, people might say to me, oh, what? Being raised by a woman is wrong? Being raised by a woman is not wrong. But if we're not going to acknowledge that women are different than men, because women are not men and men are not women, and raising men might very well require a man around to show them the way, well, then I think that we're being completely dishonest, and I have no interest in that. Thank you, Cleveland. Good night. I was discussing this on my morning show when someone sent me a post, and the post was about how the real privilege in America is having a father, and it was a post that shows children in poverty by family structure, and how in 2001, 8% of married couples had children in poverty, where the couple was married, right, or had children in poverty, and where it was a female-headed household, it was 39.2%. In 2011, it was about 11% of married couples had a child in poverty. And a female-headed households, it's 47.6%. Well, that is a very, very easy understand mathematics. Two people, by and large, means more income coming in. More dollars coming in, which means less poverty. It's a very simple equation. What I took umbrage with was the idea of the real privilege in America is having a father. No. The real privilege in America is having a father. That is not privilege. The argument is that, you know, for a kid who doesn't have a father, somebody else having a father is. And I would say this is exactly the conversation that Harrison Butker is having, in my view. It's certainly the conversation that I am having. We have a responsibility conversation that is worthy of entertaining. If I create the kid, it is my responsibility to be the father. Not my privilege. Although I may consider it a privilege to have such wonderful children. Right? What a sweet thing to say. No one cares about that. The kid is not privileged. It is my responsibility to be a father. I can't say that enough. In the same way I discuss with my children very, very clearly that I am not their friend. I love my kids. The things I would do for my children, I'm not quite sure I could say everything on air. But I am not my kids' friend. I'm not the friend of my children. I'm their father. It's a much different role. It is a much different role. It is an extremely important role, one that I take seriously, and one that is my responsibility. The problem is we don't have enough people who want to take on the responsibility or recognize that they must take on the responsibility. Never mind want. Nobody asked what you wanted. You wanted to have sex with her. That was about your want. After that, ain't about your want, boo-boo. Kitten. By the way, some people have emailed me. They really don't like my use of the word kitten. They don't like being called kitten. I don't know what to do with that right there. I don't know. Maybe not take it so personally. I don't know. If it's really like a problem, let me know. Let me know at Tony Katz there on X. No one cares what you think about after the kid's there. That's your responsibility. That's on you. And how do we not look at men and say, well, that's on you? What happens culturally to allow men, so-called men, to skate? And maybe to maybe a little more proactive. What does one do now to ensure that they are there? Well, I could start with a basic. Stop thinking that being a single mom is cool. You're wrong, ladies. You're wrong. And for all the liberal white women who want to applaud it, you've always been wrong. You're liberal white women. You are the worst people out there. You're wrong about everything. You're wrong about who you vote for. You're wrong about the economy. You're wrong about what your children should learn. You're wrong about everything. I wonder if I have made clear my thoughts about liberal white women. I don't know. Let me get a ruling on this. Producer Jason, you think I've been clear about where I am on the liberal white woman? All right, just making sure. I would hate, Producer Jason, for there to be some ambiguity. Should I go just a little bit further, make sure everybody gets it? All right. Well, you see, you call a liberal white woman kitten, who there are forms that are filled out. There's a whole HR thing if you call a liberal white woman kitten. And by the way, I think that liberal white women are probably too heavy to be called kitten. There's probably another term. You're terrible. Don't celebrate being a single parent. Don't do it. It's not that some people aren't and actually aren't by necessity. It is the idea of celebrating it as a norm, as a good. Sometimes it is needed, but it is certainly not good. It should not be the standard. It should not be seen as something as value. Oh, you are such a strong, independent woman. Oh, holy hell, what are we doing here? This is valueless. And in that context, one actually has to discuss, well, if we aren't supportive of the idea or cheering, I should say, because we could very well be supportive. We're not cheering the idea of being a single parent. Then one has to start recognizing that that involves not cheering runaway sex. And that's when you realize, like when you're a conservative, that you realize like, oh my gosh, when did that happen to me? I used to be totally fine with trying to get a little something out there. Now all of a sudden I'm talking about don't have sex with strangers, don't have sex with people you don't know, don't have willy-nilly sex, it should matter, know the person, be in a relationship. What happened to me? It comes from a recognition of society. And to an extent it comes a little bit with age and it comes with thought. It comes with seeing what happens from that, and you're like, wait a second, that sucks. It creates no value whatsoever. So does the opposite create some value? And then you take a look at the family, and you're like, huh. This also can be related to the Marxism conversation. Because what is the Marxist in favor of? The destruction of the family unit. Black Lives Matter, run by Marxists, said it on their website until they got caught and then erase, erase, erase. They want to destroy the family unit. All of this, trans that, trans your mother, trans fats, all about destroying the family unit. Where you, the parent, or I should say the parent in general, because you might not be the parent, they don't have a say in their kid's life. The kid decides they're a girl, but they're actually a 14-year-old boy. Off with the penis and let them change and take the puberty blocker, and you parents don't have any say. As a matter of fact, we'll take your kid from you. Destruction of the family. What is destruction of the family? Oh, you don't have to worry about breakfast. We'll serve it at school. Oh, you don't have to worry about lunch. We'll serve it at school. Oh, you don't have to worry about dinner. We'll serve it at school. And you say to me, Tony, are you saying that providing poor kids meals is destruction of the family unit? And I'll say to you, as clear as day and without an ounce of hesitation, yes. I'm not saying kids shouldn't have lunch. I am saying that it is not a good. It might be necessary, but it is not a good. It is actually destructive. because it takes responsibility away from the parent and cleaves the child from the parent and makes the parent think that they don't have to worry about this or that or the other. The state will take care of it. Thus, I go back to the conversation about Marxism. And sometimes when you realize how all that connects, it can hit you like a brick directly to the face. And you're like, well, I'll be good and damned. I think that's what Harrison Butker did in this conversation. It's a brick to the face. Well, I'll be good and damned. We have to recognize the things that we have done simply do not work, and we should change course. And one should change course honestly. One should change course by not celebrating the things that create bad results. Stop celebrating it. I am not a fool. People are going to have sex. And allow me to say, I am a huge fan. I am a huge fan of the sex. Just me? Really, Producer Jason, just me? Huge fan! But if we're going to say that it should be consequenceless, I mean, isn't that what the abortion conversation is? You got a singer, Olivia Rodrigo. She's passing out day after pills, morning after pills at her concerts. These young girls are showing up. Hey, sex is consequenceless. Here, take this pill. No baby for you. But there are consequences. And the consequences of society that's killing itself and destroying itself. Maybe we shouldn't celebrate that. I'm Tony Katz. Got 450 Jewish entertainers writing a letter, signing a letter denouncing Jonathan Glazer, who directed a film called The Zone of Interest, for his refuting Jewishness being hijacked for the purpose of drawing moral equivalence between a Nazi regime and an Israeli nation that seeks to avert its own extermination, meaning Israel should somehow stop with the war against Hamas. They're going into Rafah, people. So you've got these actors and actresses all signing this letter denouncing what it is that Jonathan Glazer said. Well, that's fine. I don't mind you doing that. But you know that doesn't matter, right? You have to vote differently. Take the 450, Deborah Messing and Juliana Margulies and Michael Rappaport. How many of you are voting for Biden? Because if you tell me the vast majority, well, then I clearly, it doesn't matter what gets said, you guys haven't learned. I'm Tony Katz. This is Tony Katz Today.